Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Waka! Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Kuyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Lori Luke. Lori is from St. Mary's, Alaska on her dad's side and Duncan, British Columbia on her mom's side, but now resides on Dena'ina Land in Anchorage, Alaska. Lori is half Yupik and half Cowichan Indian. She is 1,016 days sober, and on this show, Lori courageously shares her story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Lori Luke. Hi, Lori. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Ralph. I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm cold.
My goodness, yes.
Yeah. The way I found you was a social media post, and you posted you were 993 days, correct?
Yeah, yep. So I've been keeping track of all my days since day one.
Wow, congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Lori, can you go ahead and introduce yourself so our listeners can get to know you?
Yeah, so my name is Lori Luke. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. My family is originally from St. Mary's, my dad's side, and my mom's side is originally from Vancouver Island, from a town called Duncan, British Columbia. So I grew up most of my life in Anchorage, but in my sophomore year in high school, I chose to go back to St. Mary's to live with my grandma and grandpa and kind of experience the village life out there and the culture. And since then, you know, I've kind of moved around a little just to, you know, even you experience life. You know, I've lived up in Nome, I've lived in Wasilla. I just currently moved back to Anchorage recently, probably last summer, like in June. So now I'm back in Anchorage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Are you Yupik?
I am. I'm half Yupik and I'm half Cowichan Indian.
Oh, where's that from?
It's from Vancouver Island, from a town called Duncan, British Columbia.
Wow, I've never heard of that before. Can you say that again, please?
Cowichan.
Cowichan. Okay, so cool, so cool.
Yeah.
Can you go ahead and let everyone know what things looked like before you got sober and why you got sober?
Yeah, so, oh gosh, I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning from when I started drinking, because, you know, it was a long span over 30 years that I was, you know, just kind of grew into an alcoholic. You know, it didn't just start out, you know, one day, bam, you know, it just kind of evolved into alcoholism, you know. So when I was 15 years old, was the first time I had a drink of alcohol, and I remember thinking, oh, this is going to be so cool. Like, you know, I'm going to hang out with my friends and we're going to party and we're going to have some fun. And I remember waking up the next day and it was not so fun. But, you know, from that, you know, it kind of evolved into, like, in my 20s, when I turned 21 specifically, I remember thinking it was so cool to be able to go out to the bars. And I actually became a bartender because at that time I was living up in Nome, and you know, that was like the social thing to do up there because, you know, what are you going to do all winter? And it was just fun back in those days. You know, it was a fun pastime. You know, I would go play pool and, you know, would meet up with other bartenders and we just kind of had our own little crowd that we would hang out with. And at that time, I never really considered myself as a alcoholic because it just seemed like the fun thing to do. But, you know, when you start thinking, oh, every single weekend I'm gonna go out on a Friday and a Saturday night, you know, it's a lot of time and energy and money that you put into drinking. You know, it's, you know, when I left Nome back in 2001, I actually moved down to Seattle to go take care of my mom because my real mom, she was having liver failure at that time, and there was no one else in our family that was able to care for her. So I moved down there and took care of my mom for, I want to say, probably like 6 months before she passed away. And, you know, it was kind of emotional turmoil, you know, when I didn't really grow up with my mom. You know, I'd go down and I'd go visit her every summer, and that was about it. So when you're going down there and you're taking care of your loved ones in other ways, it kind of really brings out, you know, what you really want to do with yourself in life. But once she passed away, you know, that grief was really hard for me, and I really turned to alcohol to cope with that grief. And it just kind of spun from there. I would say that grief has been the most hardest thing to cope with in life. And I would never ever wish that upon anyone to turn to alcohol to go through those hard times because, you know, it really just takes away the time that you have with your loved ones that are still here on earth, you know, and it takes away a lot of things in life that you should be living for, not, you know, taking away from.
Yeah, I've heard the term, or I've heard the phrase, I've lost family members and friends, but they're still alive. You know, have you heard that before?
Yes, yep. That's a whole nother type of grief that I've had to deal with that as well. You know, when you're going through like a breakup, you know, and you still love that person, but you're no longer together. That was a whole nother side of grief that I have experienced too, and that was really hard to get over. You know, and you just have to, I don't want to say you just have to because you're not just doing anything. It's, you know, having to accept it is the main thing, you know, because grief is a process you go through, and I don't really remember all of the steps that you go through for grief, but I know the first thing you have to do is accept it, you know, so you can start moving on through the other phases to get over it.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't have any ways of dealing with that type of stress. So, like you said, we turn to alcohol to kind of numb the pain and deal with it that way, even though it's an unhealthy way to cope. That's like a coping mechanism, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I know there's a lot of different reasons people will have to drink. You know, when I was thinking about it, there's like, you know, you drink out of happiness, you drink to celebrate, you drink when you're angry. You know, if you just had a bad day and you get off work at 5 o'clock, you're like, I'm just gonna go hit that L store on the way home and get myself a six pack. You know, there's all kinds of reasons and excuses that you can have to, you know, just go run to the liquor store and get that six pack and that pack of cigarettes and, you know, go home and think, oh, this is gonna help make my day better, but doesn't really help you get over that until, you know, you're really sober and in that mindset where you can help yourself to get over that. That's been one of my greatest challenges is actually coping with like the real feelings of everything. Because when you decide to get sober, it's like you really have to learn how to love yourself and accept yourself and all of the challenges that you have in a daily life. You know, you just got to take it all in, and there's no pushing it away or there's no way to numb it. You know, you just have to absorb it and deal with it, you know, from from that moment on.
Yeah, no kidding. And sometimes that's the hardest thing to do, you know, because you're so used to numbing it with that alcohol or drugs. So you don't have to deal with it. Now you have all these emotions that you have to navigate through and learn how to cope with in a healthy way. And I didn't know how to do that. It took me so long, and you know, I went through how many different treatments, and the last treatment I started talking to a clinician, and that's when things started to, like, I started to just understand what made me, you know, want to drink, and the traumas and the shame and everything that I went through. It took me so long to do that. And now that I see a therapist, I can kind of, you know, unload on that. I don't want to say unload, but, you know, just talk it through. And it is like so immensely different now than, you know, when I drank.
Totally.
What was the inspiration for you to become sober?
You know, Hart, I was talking about this last night with my youngest daughter. So I have a 17-year-old and I have a 19-year-old. And, you know, and I told my daughter last night that I was going to be on your show. And she was like, really? You know, she was kind of like really excited and happy for me, you know, to share my sobriety journey with you. And you know, she was like, how do you know when you decided to become sober? And she didn't remember that last night that I drank. You know, I was out drinking with one of my friends at the time. And, you know, we would go out into our cars and we'd listen to music and smoke cigarettes and we'd just sit out there and have some beers. And she thought that I was sitting out in my car, you know, with her all night long. And I don't know what time she came out in the morning, but she said she woke me up in the car. I was slumped over in the driver's seat with my music probably all the way up. And, you know, I was just passed out in my car. And she said she woke me up and helped me get inside the house. And the next day when she told me, I was so ashamed. You know, I was just like so embarrassed that, you know, my daughter had to see me like that. And it just made me feel so bad as a mom, you know, like I want to be a better mom for my child. And from that day, I decided, you know, my daughter should never have to see her mother like that. And that was the day that I decided to be sober. And she didn't realize that. And I think it just brought us back to be grateful for who we are. And, you know, I was just grateful. I didn't, you know, I wasn't drinking and driving out there on the road, or, you know, something terrible could have happened. Like I could have hit somebody or killed myself, or, you know, you hear all these horror stories about people drinking and driving, and it was getting to the point where it was just, you know, really normal to just go out with my friend and we'd just go have a six pack and drive around in Wasilla, like on the back roads. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she just was really appreciative, and, you know, she was like, wow, Mom, I didn't realize that was the day that you decided that you were going to be sober, because it was the day before Cinco de Mayo, almost 3 years ago now.
Wow, man, when you go back to talking about that shame afterwards, like after you do something when you were drinking, oh, that like paralyzed me the next day. Even longer than that, it seemed like it took me a long time because of the things I, like, what did I do? Why did, you know? And
yeah.
It seems like sometimes people get stuck in that situation. And the only thing that I could think of at that time was, you know, go get a hair of the dog drink or something like that, so I don't have to think about that again, you know?
Yeah.
When you decided that day that, okay, I'm not going to drink again, what kind of process did you go through? Was it difficult?
Oh my gosh, Ralph. It was probably the most eye-opening experience that I ever had in my life. The day that I decided to get sober Well, of course, you know what? I was hungover that day.
Yeah.
But from that day on, I had to learn how to accept everything that I do in life, every single action, every single decision. I had to, know that I was going to make a conscious decision for myself and for my daughters, because I'm a single mom, so raising my kids by myself is, it's a challenge at times. And I just think that it's been really great to, for my daughters to see me turn to sobriety and living in all of those, hard decision-making moments.
Yeah, the difference between, raising kids when you're drinking and, I went through that shame about, man, why did I do that to my kids? And, it'll take time for me, for my kids to, trust me again and everything. But it's like breaking a cycle, It's like, okay, my kids don't have to do this like I did it.
Yeah, exactly. And what I was really pondering on this last night, that it really does come from generational trauma, because my dad, my stepmom, my biological mom, they were all boarding school survivors, and the trauma that they had to go through, kind of passed on to me through their drinking. And then, that just passed on, to me, and I was really impacted by their boarding school days, because they turned to drinking to cope, for all of their traumas that they had gone through. And I've only heard stories about what they went through. I can't even imagine, what they had really had to deal with going through, boarding schools. But,
Yeah, that when people lived through that, that's a big thing that the survivors went
it's
through, just to be through that, and there was no way to cope with it, but just to drink and deal with it that way. But the thing was not talking about it, and just keeping it stuffed in, and then just generation after generation passing it through all that trauma, passing it through generations. And when we get somebody like you who decides to stop that cycle and start to heal, it's just amazing.
Thank you. I'm really happy to say that, every day is a different day, and you never know what's going to come at you. So, something can come at you sideways and kind of like emotionally hit you. I've had days where, an ex-boyfriend's reached out to me, and it kind of threw me all up in turmoil, bringing up all those feelings and emotions again. And there were times where I was like, oh man, I just want to go have a six pack and just kind of try to forget about it. Or, when you have to deal with those real emotions, it's hard. I mean, it's really impactful when you still love someone, like when we were talking about it earlier, when you still love someone and you're going through that grief and they're still alive, it's really hard. Because you can't just ignore it. There's no way, you can't turn to alcohol to numb those feelings. And you just kind of have to just sit there and think, find new ways to take care of yourself and those feelings. And it's been really great for me, because I have some really awesome sober friends now. So my network has been kind of, we've all just kind of went through different times where we decided to get sober, and we were all there when we were drinking. We were all drunks together. We would all go out and party, and then one by one, one girlfriend would turn sober, and we would always be there to support her, and then another one and another one. And all five of my girlfriends, I talk to them every single day. They've been really helpful. Like, I tell them everything that I'm going through. So it's really good to have someone that you can talk to, in those hardest times and in those greatest moments in life, and share those experiences with them. Like when you had invited me to come onto your show, I had told all of them, and they were all so proud of me, and they were just so happy that I was going to share my sober journey.
Yeah, that's so cool. And sober friends, sober support is so important. And that brings me back to when you were talking about your exes and stuff like that, sometimes you have to put that boundary down, you know? Even me with my, you know, some of my family, I have to set that boundary because I'm in recovery, you know? I can't deal with the stuff that they say to me, and you know, the late night drunk talks, you know, talking to them. it gets yeah. kind of hard, and I had to set some boundaries, you know. That's really important. But that sober support, I don't know how many times I can say this, it is like one of the most important things.
It sure is. And I want to kind of talk about those boundaries, because that was the first thing I learned when I got sober was, I didn't get sober overnight. So, I mean, it took me like 4, 5, 6 times of trying to get sober. Like, I made a decision like 6 months prior to the actual date where I became sober. So I'd go like 7 days at first, and then the next time I'd go like 21 days, and then 31 days. And, you know, throughout those, from the time that I first tried, and I realized, you know, I'm still hanging out with this friend, and she's still drinking, and she's not supporting me or respecting my sobriety, you know. And I would still, and it was my only friend that I had that lived in Wausau at the time. So I had to set that boundary for myself. And one day I just told her, you know what, I'm really trying to get sober, and I don't think I can go riding around with you tonight, because, you know, it just brings out all these feelings of, you know, like that whiff of that cigarette, you know, like, oh, it makes me want to have a beer. Or, you know, and she's drinking and I can smell it on her, you know, it just has something in your, it like kicks off something in your mind where you're like, oh man, I kind of miss that. Like, I could just have one, or, you know. Yeah. And I just told her, like, you know, I'm sorry, I can't go riding around with you tonight. I'm just going to stay home. And then it took many, many days of ignoring phone calls for the sake of my own sanity. And for everyone out there that's trying to get sober, you know, you really have to set those boundaries. And you may lose those friends, but you know what you gain out of that is your family. You know, like, my kids got my time. I was able to spend more time with them rather than out joyriding. And it's precious, precious time that we have on earth that really, really matters with the loved ones that you still have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the taste of non-alcoholic beer or something like that, but they're not getting the, you know, the alcohol in it. So, you know, to each their own, and everybody's different, you know. So what is one piece of advice you'd like to give someone that is either new to recovery or sobriety, or is out there struggling right now?
I think if people are trying to get sober, it's worth it, for not only for yourself, but for your loved ones and your family. And if you have children, especially for your children, you know, when you decide on that day that you want to get sober, it might not take you, might take you one try, it might take you 10 tries, but ultimately in the end, it's only going to be beneficial for you, because we do only get, you know, one mind, one body, and one soul, and we have to take care of ourselves. And when I decided to get sober, you know, I had seen some friends that were going through some really hard times with drinking, and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to end up, you know, in the hospital with liver failure, you know, and having to see my mom go through that too. You know, I was like, I want to live for my kids. You know, I don't want my kids to see me like that. So I really, really thought about that a lot when, every day, you know, I'm like, I gotta live for my babies, because I wanna live to be 100 and maybe someday see my own grandchildren, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people, just like you said, I've seen a lot of people with, you know, health issues just because of, you know, drinking or using drugs. And it's pretty sad. That's another good deterrent to, you know, just to think about that kind of stuff. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we end this?
I don't think there is anything else I'd like to share, but I just wanted to say that, you know, to be grateful for every day that we have on this earth is important. You know, I try to, when I'm doing things around my house, like cleaning, I try to make it count. Like every step that I take in my house is to do something, you know. If I'm going upstairs, say, you know, and I'm bringing something upstairs, I'm going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to bring something downstairs when I'm coming down and just make it worth my while. You know, everything that we do in our life matters, and everything, every conscious decision that we make is going to have an impact on, you know, I think of my children when I'm making these decisions, you know, and I always, you know, I've got this really strong bond with my daughters, and I include them in every major decision that I'm making in my life just to, so they feel like they have that value and that input in what I'm putting forth, you know, because they've seen me in my worst days of my alcoholism, and they for sure have seen me in my best days. And it's been so, I can't even think of a word. It's been so, you know, I just feel so loved, you know, together with my babies when we're going out to dinner or we're watching a movie together. You know, it's the invaluable things in life that really make a difference. And having that time, you know, time is the only thing that we really get on this earth. And time is very precious to me. And making those decisions on who you want to have in your life that is going to be beneficial for you in a good way, is really important. So making healthy boundaries, you know, keeping a clear mind, and self-care is always important to me. And then just being grateful. I gotta always say I'm always grateful for everything, you know, everyone I meet in life. You know, I always just try to maintain that positivity.
Wow, Lori, thank you so, so much. I'm so glad that I stumbled on your social media post.
Yeah, that's so cool that we were already friends. And I'm so happy that you invited me to your show, and I've been listening to your podcast. And I think I'm going to probably be addicted, and I'll probably listen to all 120 episodes or so that you have. Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing the sobriety. You know, I really want to see more Indigenous people out there being sober, because it's just going to be better for all of our people. And, you know, we all come together and we can all make it a better world and a better place and have better lives.
Well, Kayana, Lori, for sharing your story. I know your story is going to, you know, send some hope out there to people who are still struggling out there. Koyana.
Yes, Koyana Jaknakaral, for inviting me to your show. I'm so grateful that you invited me, and I look forward to listening to.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project every Thursday at 1 p.m. on 640 a.m. KYUK, the voice of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.